in, Iowa Hawkeye fans, to another episode of the Hawkeye Tailgate Report. I am Luke Myers. Joey Myers and Austin Myers are with me as well. So it's been a little bit.
That's a bit of an understatement.
Well, yeah, the last time we talked to you was the day before we got absolutely dick stomped by Ohio State on the way to the game in the van.
That was the last podcast. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was the last one we put out.
What did we take, 5 months off?
Yep.
Well, okay, so full disclosure, the apartment I lived in had, well, granted, it was probably our router. It was probably a me problem more than the apartment problem. I liked the apartment a lot. But
man,
it's
almost as if me and Joey suggested that as an issue.
It was janky. It was bad internet. We would always freeze up. I would have to go to my parents to do a show, which I did in September, but that got tiring. And I don't want to bother my parents like that. But, yeah, so we're back. What's new, guys?
Well, I mean, since the Ohio State football game, a lot. But I think that we probably don't need to talk about a lot that's happened. I think there's really only one football storyline that deserves any mention at this point in time, and besides that, we can just kind of focus on basketball.
And that one football topic is Amir Smith Marset's a Super Bowl champion.
Who would have thought?
Yeah. The only Iowa player to win a Super Bowl ring this year, wide receiver.
Yeah, that shuts up all the haters. No, but, yeah. So, yeah, football, obviously, everybody knows, was a joke down the stretch, an absolute miserable joke, capped off with a terrible loss against Nebraska. And then, yeah, Brian Ferentz's contract situation. 25 points is a pretty low bar, considering you're accounting for usually one score from our defense.
Yeah, so... I mean, really, both parts, you know, both of the kind of benchmark stipulations in that contract are a joke. I tend to gravitate towards 7 wins being the bigger joke of the two, like, offensive, or, you know, the goals that are stated there, because literally 1 week prior to that contract being announced, at a press conference, Kirk Ferentz said the goal was to win more than 8 games. But then you literally turn around and put into your offensive coordinator's contract that he needs to win 7 games a year, including a potential bowl game. I mean, what the fuck are we even doing?
Yeah, and I'm all for our floor is like 7 to 8 wins every year. But the fact that Kirk keeps pumping this up as like some big milestone that, like, we don't, like, I don't know. It's, we, in the landscape of modern college football, I think, hey, shut up. I think that our standard should be more of, like, 9 to 10 wins should be the expectation every year, not the 7 wins, which is now part of Brian Ferentz's embarrassing contract.
Yeah, so, I mean... The Iowa offense is just, like, as a concept, is broken and is, like, a full 2 decades behind what the rest of modern college football is attempting to do right now. And whether or not you want to hear it, Kirk Ferentz is a kind of a big reason as to why we're doing that. And to an extent, Brian can be hamstrung by... what Kirk wants to do, but that's not to say that Brian is good at his job, because he's still not. If you look like his situational play calling and just like offensive like concepts as a whole are just really not good. So, like, yeah, I get the argument that he's running Kirk's offense, but. I mean, the two offensive coordinators that came before him, Greg Davis and Ken O'Keefe, were also running the Kirk Ferentz offense, and they were never as bad as what the last 2-year stretch has been with Brian at the helm. So even though, you know, our offense is outdated, big picture, whole football program, that still doesn't excuse the fact that we finished 130th in total offense out of 131 FBS programs. And when you couple that with the fact that the defense and the special teams are legitimately, like, championship caliber good, and then you just, the offense drags down this team's ceiling from like 11 wins to what we were at this year. It's just, it's embarrassing and it's sad and it's frustrating. And if it wasn't Brian Ferentz, if it was not for nepotism, because I'm not going to sugarcoat around it, that is what it fucking is nepotism that has Brian keeping this job. He would not be there. Any other school in the entire country would have fired their offensive coordinator if the results for the last 2 years had been what they were. But because Brian is the head coach's son, he gets to stick in this job and make almost $1 million a year doing it. It's sad, it's pathetic, it's disgusting, it's aggravating. Whatever term you want to use for it, it is that. And it's just an injustice to Iowa football fans and their community. It just pisses me off to no end.
Yeah, and it is kind of weird, though. We've seen how bad the offensive coaching has been. And nobody ever thought Kirk Ferentz would transition to like the modern like transfer portal times and whatnot. Okay, so we're going to have a completely different offense next year. No Petrus, no wide receivers. We're not going to have Bruce or Keegan Johnson. Laporte is gone. However, we're bringing in Cade McNamara, who gave it to us 2 years ago in the Big Ten Championship game. Eric All from Michigan. Ton of other good athletes as well. Key positions coming in. I don't know what to expect at all. I think we'll probably win 9 games. We have a pretty favorable schedule, but I just don't know how to judge anything.
I don't know. Is there a way? I don't want them to be a train wreck next year. But like, obviously, I would prefer if I was good, but like Kirk has said that he expects no like high level changes in like offensive scheme, or like they're not going to change who they're trying to be. And granted, we have gotten some players in the transfer portal to fill in on the offensive line, which as that goes, that's kind of how the offense goes. But I mean, right now the track record is kind of speaking for itself. So this is not a, like, you get the benefit of the doubt situation in offense anymore. It's like who you are, who you said that you were. So you need to now prove that you're going to be something different. And if they're not, I mean, Iowa fans are already calling for heads to roll. So I don't know how much more they can do outside of like actually physically removing somebody from their fucking job, like going down into the football performance building and literally dragging Brian Ferentz out onto the street.
An insurrection of sorts.
Yeah.
And it was
that's what it's going to come to. And my worst fear is that Iowa wins 7 games this next football season and averages 25.1 points per game, because then contractually Brian Ferentz gets a new 2-year rolling contract plus a bonus for all of the money that he got stripped from his contract this year. So, like, are we really going to hamstring ourselves into that type of situation where the success is clearly not there, but the pitifully low benchmarks have been met, so then we keep him around again? Because I feel like that's the situation that every Iowa fan is fearing right now.
And, like, when the contract details got released, national media people were laughing in our face. And
they've been laughing in our face for the last 2 years.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if they're laughing. Like, I've heard a ton of people say they feel sorry for the players and athletes and stuff, which they should. I mean,
yeah.
They're not, like, even the defense, and granted, the defense all last year, oh, this is a team sport, we don't look at it like one side or the other. That's bullshit. When you're the number one defense in the country, And you have, what did we finish with? 8 wins?
It's probably 9.
It's still a joke. Yeah, I don't know. But one of the funny tweets I saw, I think it was from Tom Fernelli. He said, can you imagine how exciting the Iowa-Nebraska game is going to be when Iowa's averaging like 24.9 points per game going to Lincoln the final week of the year?
Yeah.
That'll be the first time I ever root for Iowa to lose against Nebraska.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe,
like,
maybe.
People are going to make jokes like that, but realistically how that, you know, that points per game thing is going to swing is that in Iowa's, you know, bye games at the beginning of the year where they would normally put in the second stringers and, you know, take the foot off the gas a little bit, I guarantee you they're going to be trying to score as many points as possible so that way when it gets to Big Ten schedule, they do not have to be as good. I'd put any money on it.
We have a pretty terrible non-conference, right? I mean, we had a pretty terrible – well, I mean, I guess not last year. We ended up playing South Dakota State, who won Division 1A or whatever.
I mean, that's not an excuse for us scoring 3 points on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. All right. Did we get all the football out? Can we talk about the better sports now?
Yeah, just kind of as a general capstone. Fuck Gary Barta all to hell, too, because that guy just fucking sucks. He's such a pussy about not wanting to offend Kirk Ferentz that even though Gary Barta is the direct supervisor of Brian Ferentz, because the university literally created new rules to avoid nepotism laws that they had in place so Brian could be hired in the first place, and then he still does not do what anybody with a pea-sized brain in any other college football program in the country could have done. So fuck that guy, too.
I second that. Yeah, I mean, Barta's never going to hire another coach. He won't make it to that point. So they're all going to ride off into the sunset together, and hopefully LeVar Woods takes the reins. So, alrighty. Now we get to talk about basketball, and it has been a confusing season. However, I feel good, right?
I feel pretty good, considering that brutal loss they had at the beginning of the season, and the recent game against Purdue, albeit a loss. They could have gotten blown out in that game based on how the first half went, and they actually made it a game at the end. So,
and then they still kind of got blown out.
They still did, but like
they showed fight anyway.
Yeah. So I think they're a team that can win a couple games in the tournament.
Considering they've literally never done that under Fran McCaffrey, I'm not gonna proclaim that they can win a couple games in the tournament.
They can. Will they?
No.
Probably not.
It's just weird though, right? Because like the first couple weeks of the year, Peyton Sanford was absolutely terrible, right? And then Perkins, after that, went on a couple week stretch where I don't even know how to explain how bad his play was. He was getting benched for Josh Dix, and who am I missing? Fuck, I can't think of it. But he didn't have any touch. He couldn't shoot the ball. He wasn't playing great defense. And I love Chris Murray, but my God, when that guy misses shots, he leaves no doubt about it. Those shots are missing.
I've never seen such a good shooter also be such a bad shooter. his threes either touch nothing but the bottom of the net or nothing but the bottom right side of the backboard. Like, it's unbelievable.
Sometimes when you're hot, you're hot, and when you're not, you're not.
And the thing about this team specifically is, so you mentioned how there was a stretch where Sanford sucked, a stretch where Perkins sucked. There's also been stretches where those guys have been incredible. Like, Sanford has to be one of the streakiest players I've ever seen in my whole life. I think he is truly a guy where if he makes the first shot of the night,
he's going to go off, and if he misses, might be a struggle.
It sets the tone for his whole night. But, I mean, we've seen Ulis. There was a couple games there where Ulis looked like a stud. Perkins had the 33-point game recently. All these guys that they have are capable of doing that. they just if they could figure out how to put it together in one night, I think they could be a scary team. The one thing that does worry me a little bit is the 3-point shooting. We don't have, aside from Sanford, we don't really have like a pure 3-point shooter that's going to be there consistently.
I think Chris shoots like north of 35% from three.
I think Dix could be that guy eventually.
I agree with Dix potentially being that guy too, but
I like Dix. He's got a lot of potential.
We love Dix here. Love Dix. Their record is good right now. Like, if you told me this is where we are at this point in the year, I'd be like, oh, that's all right, not bad. But we suck against the lower level teams.
Yeah, no. It's one of the most bizarre things that I've ever seen. If you look at where Iowa is in the standings in the Big Ten, they have lost to every team that's below them in the standings and beat every team that's ahead of them except for Purdue.
What about Minnesota?
Oh, okay, yeah, I guess that was before. But like
even that game yesterday, we were, what was it, a 3-point game at half after we were up by 12 in the first 10 minutes?
Because we missed like 40 layups.
Yeah, but like, why is that every game? Without a doubt, we will go 4 minutes without a bucket.
There's something to be said about playing to the level of your competition, whether or not that's up or down, but
also, to be fair, that's just a college basketball thing. You watch any college basketball game, within the first half, one team will be up 15 almost out of like every time, and then it always becomes a close game. So I mean, basketball is just a swing sport.
Yeah, and I mean, this year in college basketball too, there is not one single team that has separated itself. Like Purdue has lost twice now within the last 2 weeks. Like you don't have like one of your, I mean, shit. Duke, North Carolina, and Kentucky are all unranked. Gonzaga is not who they have been in the past. Baylor is, you know,
Baylor's kind of coming on.
Yeah, Baylor's, but I mean, it's just like all of the traditional teams, even, I mean, Kansas is still pretty good this year, but they don't look like they are nearly the team that they were that won the national championship last year. There's not a team that has separated themselves in college basketball this year, kind of across all the different leagues. So it's just, this year's title feels more up for grabs than it has in a really long time.
I mean, last year at this time, if you told me Iowa was going to win the Big Ten tournament and get a 5 seed, they had just like last year at this time, it was a couple games after they lost to Penn State on the road last year, and we all thought the season was ending right then.
Yeah, and I mean, it's certainly. I wouldn't say it seems likely, but it's not impossible. If you were to tell me that Iowa finds himself in the Big Ten championship, I would not be shocked because of how even the Big Ten seemingly is and how good they can be at times. So,
I mean, we beat Indiana, who if you asked people who the best team in the Big Ten was, some people would probably say Indiana because they did beat Purdue head to head, but we beat Indiana. Granted, they didn't have Race Thompson, which is a huge factor as well. He got hurt early in that game, and we overcame a 23-point deficit.
That game was batshit crazy.
But like, we came back from what were we down by 21 against Purdue, and we cut it to a 5-point game or something like that.
I don't remember the exact number, but I was almost ready.
It was over 20.
I had put the men's game on the little TV and had the women's game on the big TV. So my confidence was slipping quickly there.
Now, however, if you said Iowa doesn't get a top 4 seed and they lose on Friday, their first game of the Big Ten tournament, I wouldn't be surprised either.
Right. Because that's tradition almost.
Also, outside of Purdue, the next 8 teams in the Big Ten standings are separated by, at most, what, 2 games? Probably a game and a half. I mean, it is just a huge jumbled mess after Purdue. So,
all right, Oops, sorry. You can go.
I was just gonna say the fight for the double bye is gonna be crazy down the stretch.
I was just going to say, okay, here's your top four seeds right now in the Big Ten. Purdue, Indiana, Northwestern, Illinois. And then Iowa, it goes Maryland, Iowa for 5-6. If we faced any of those, I would...
I'd want to play Northwestern.
Yeah. I know that they're playing well this year, but it's still Northwestern. I don't buy into them.
They have, like, a couple guys that are pretty good. But when we played them, I never really felt on edge at all. We kind of seemed in control of that game from start to finish.
Yeah, well, we were at that one. Were we up by... were we up at half?
I think we were up the whole time.
Were we? That was a good game, though. I mean, Northwestern's quality.
They had a couple guys that just couldn't miss. Boo Boo, he was doing awesome, and whoever number one is, I can't remember his name, but he was hitting that little fadeaway every time.
Yeah, he killed us. Now, on the schedule still, Iowa has Nebraska and Ohio State and Wisconsin, actually. You can't lose to Nebraska and Ohio State. And, I mean, Wisconsin's looking worse and worse by the game. So, yeah. I mean, when you beat for sure Nebraska, Ohio State, you're probably fine, but you can...
If our offense doesn't completely fail us against Wisconsin, we should win because...
They are bad.
They are not good.
That's looking like a pretty bad loss, especially because it was at home.
What are they, net like 70 or something? In the 70s?
I'm not sure.
They're real bad. Yeah. But, like, think of how close. Like, if we lost to them in overtime, we barely lost to Penn State. There's, like, some just easy, like, well, not easy.
We lost
wins,
to Eastern Illinois.
That few week stretch of the season, yeah. I was completely out on this team. I will be very honest.
I gave up.
We were only a couple games above 500 at that point, right?
Yeah.
It was not pretty.
Yeah. That loss to Eastern Illinois legitimately is going to cost Iowa a seed line in the NCAA tournament.
Oh, yeah. I at the time I said that is the single worst loss in the Fran McCaffrey era, and I don't think
it's not particularly close because they had bad losses early in his tenure, but the teams were dog shit. This is not a bad team.
And now the only
Eastern Illinois is like ranked 350 out of like 360 teams in Division I basketball. They're bad.
Yeah. Why was that game moved, though? Was there a weather issue?
There was a snowstorm coming in.
And it got pushed to, like, a Wednesday or Thursday afternoon, right?
I think it was on the same day that the tip just got moved up.
I don't remember.
I was indeed at that game. It was,
oh, man.
Can't confirm, was not fun.
Tough look for Sten.
Yeah.
But... Yeah. One person who absolutely deserves all the props in the world is Philip Rabracha. He's going to earn an all Big Ten honor here. I don't know if he'll get second team, but he'll probably get third.
He's such a dog considering every matchup he's going up against somebody that is at least an inch and a half bigger than him, it seems. And he is all over the boards. His offensive game has gotten so much better. I'm a huge Rabracha fan. I hate when people shit on him.
He's averaging a double-double, right?
I don't think so.
Cannot confirm that, but...
I'll confirm it right now.
I wouldn't be surprised, because he's a freaking animal.
But, like, last year... I'm sorry, go.
I was just saying, I've said all season, can you imagine if we still had Nungy and we could have Philip at the four instead of playing center all the time? Or even just have Rabracha coming off the bench.
Just have legitimate center depth.
Oh.
As much as I love Big Jelly, he's...
You mean the Edie stopper?
Yeah. Like, he can have, you know, well, I mean, he's been injured a lot, especially in the Big Ten season, so you can't really make sweeping, you know, announcements about him. But he's more of, like, give you 4 minutes type of player, not somebody that you can really rely on to give you like 15 minutes in a game. He's fun. I like him, but we need a more proven option depth piece at the five spot.
Yeah. When your options behind him are Big Jelly and Mulvey, that's just tough.
Yeah.
If Ogunleye had any offensive game at all, I think he could be a serviceable player, but he clearly...
I wouldn't even say offensive game if he was just coordinated.
Well, I mean, he's good enough at defense because he's just a big body. He's not afraid to rough some guys up. If he could, like, make a 8-footer, he'd be great.
Yeah, I think his conditioning could probably be improved upon as well.
I think that's to put it lightly. Yeah.
Can we all?
Yeah, but Rebrach is averaging 14-8. So
yeah, so I mean, yeah, he's playing really good. I think, I mean, I was gonna need to hit the portal this off season because there's just gonna be some needs that need to be filled, and that Farquaz or whatever that they were trying to transfer in the portal, they're trying to target in the portal this last season, is in the portal again because he got injured like right away at the school that he committed to, and I don't know if he just didn't like it there or whatever, but he's in the portal again, so. Keep an eye out on Iowa kind of trying to bring him in this offseason.
God, what was that guy's name?
Like Farquaz like, or something
yeah,
like
Lord
that.
Yeah, Lord Farquaz.
He is a big son of a bitch.
Didn't he commit to Texas?
I don't remember.
Which now it's probably a good thing he got out of there.
Yeah.
And also, do you see what's happening at, what was it, New Mexico State or something like that? Or San Jose State?
It's New Mexico State, I believe.
Yeah, what the hell? I saw the headline.
Yeah, I guess it was, like, hazing or something. All I saw is that they just, like, suspended their, like, entire basketball season, basically. I didn't follow the story super closely, though.
They canceled it today. Apparently somebody died, and a player was in on
shit.
It. And the coaches were, like, covering it up. Apparently this happened a while ago. And because people thought the coach would get fired this off season.
Who is the coach
of San Jose or New Mexico State? I don't know. Where's Alford? Is he in Nevada?
Yes.
Okay, he used to be at New Mexico State, right?
Yeah.
Alford?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, holy shit. Look at this. New Mexico State head basketball coach Greg Heyer. Born. Guess where he's born, Luke?
Iowa somewhere?
Dubuque.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, what the fuck?
That's a tough look for us.
Wow.
Especially because his record was only 9-15.
Yeah, no bueno.
Are you still looking up that Fardwaz guy or?
No, I was looking up the New Mexico State basketball coach, and he's from Dubuque. That's wild.
I have heard some projections having Iowa playing Nevada and Steve Alford in the first round of the NCAA tournament.
Boy, I'd be disappointed to lose him in the first round.
Yeah, that would be.
that would be a hostile environment.
Ugh, he's a scumbag.
Sure is.
But yeah, we're what, a couple weeks here from the Big Ten tournament? What do we got? February 13th right now, so a month from now, I believe, is the weekend of the Big Ten tournament, which it's in Chicago this year. Hopefully. It is.
No, I thought you were going to ask us if we wanted to go.
Yeah, I will not be attending.
No, remember I invited everybody up to my house to watch it.
Oh, yeah, I'll be there.
You're going to come? Stin, you can come as well if you would like.
I was going to say, I don't recall getting this invite. Come.
Well, it was only to all the guys in my family, but you show up to every family function basically anyway. So.
You're not fam anymore.
Yeah. But yeah, Big Ten tournament, month out, NCAA tournament shortly after that, and we're going to be there. We're unsure if we'll be in the stadium yet.
I can confirm we'll not be in the stadium, Joey
if
Myers.
If I was playing, will you be there?
No.
Really? Why?
Financials.
Yeah, I was going to say ticket price is probably going to be a pretty big determining factor on that one.
Well, I looked at ticket prices last week, and they were under $400 for all sessions.
Okay, so can you imagine paying $400 to go watch Iowa lose to Richmond in the first round?
Well, yeah, but you'd get
there's only
what?
There's only one thing that could make that worse, and that is paying $400 to be there.
The thing about playing in Wells Fargo Arena is though that we used to play the Big Four Classic there, so maybe a little familiarity,
a little home cooking.
Well, I'm just gonna go ahead and say that no active Iowa player played there in the Big Four Classic, so the familiarity thing you can just throw out the window.
Counterpoint: Matt Gaetens, assistant coach, he played there.
Yeah, sure. We'll go with that.
I'll do my part and haze people outside the stadium where I will be drinking beer.
How about this? If Iowa plays there, we figure out who they're playing and where that team's hotel is, and then we pull the fire alarms in the middle of the night.
Turn off the water. Too.
That's all right. Last time, the NCAA tournament was there, I was there, and Louisville lost to Minnesota in the first round, I think it was. And that night we saw them out at Beer Can Alley, their basketball team.
Jesus.
Hey, I don't blame them there.
They were at that stock exchange bar.
Like 4 days.
But
that place is closed now, by the way.
The stock exchange one?
That whole building.
What? Really? Why?
No, the one with Beer Can Alley.
Yeah, why?
Yeah, stock. Yeah, just called the exchange, but I don't know.
They're putting something else there. I don't know.
They had when I've been there, they've always had good live music bands, which I'm a sucker for that. But one other men's basketball note before we can talk about the Lady Hawks. We have three Hawkeyes in the NBA, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, all doing pretty well, too.
I haven't actually looked at any of – has Joe played much? Joe Wieskamp got
– I mean, they just signed him to a 2-year NBA deal, so he must be playing well enough that they're willing to give him that.
And I don't know what Luka has to do to actually just stick permanently on the Wolves roster.
Defense.
Well, yeah, but, like, nobody plays defense.
You say that, but that's a huge misconception about the NBA. People play defense. It's just that guys are so much bigger and stronger and faster and more skilled in the NBA than on the college level.
Yeah.
You just don't have these schlubs out there that look like they're laboring to run around and play defense the whole time. Everybody is such an elite level athlete. That's one of my biggest gripes with people that shit on the NBA so they don't play defense. They absolutely do.
Well, like, you listen to the Dan Patrick Show, Joey. Dan always updates like how many 40-point games there are, and they're like on a record pace this year. Like players to have 40 points in a game, and like there's several people averaging 30 plus points a game.
Okay, but also, do you know why that? He also brought this up in there. I don't know if this was on there or the Ryan Russillo podcast I was listening to, but you think about it, like back in the 80s and 90s, there was maybe two or three foreign players in the whole league. You're getting mostly guys from the United States. You're getting the best players from the United States and the occasional stud from a different country. Anymore, I mean, you go around the league, look at the best players in the league. Giannis from Greece, Luka from somewhere else. You got out of the top 10 players in the league, at least probably half of them are not from the United States. Jokic, not from the United States. So the talent pool in the NBA now and in basketball in general is just so much bigger that you're going to have that leap up. So that's like another argument that people that basketball was the best in the 80s and 90s. That's, I mean, you didn't have as talented of people, and that's easy to see when you watch the games.
I had a fun conversation last night at the Super Bowl party I was at. First off, all the gray hairs loved the Super Bowl halftime show, but somehow, some way, we got to talking about LeBron versus Jordan.
See, I don't even entertain that argument with people of the demographic you were hanging out with last night. I won't even bring it up because it's pointless. They haven't watched a full NBA game in, you know what, they probably never have. They just know that Jordan was popular when they were young and impressionable, so they just roll with that.
Yeah. I
just don't really want to have this argument because there's nothing.
I think we're all on the same side. That
anybody can add to it.
I mean, numbers don't lie. The only number Jordan has is the rings, so, and that's a team stat. So,
yeah, but
if that's what you're basing your GOAT argument off of, it's Bill Russell.
Yeah, that's what I said last night.
Yep.
Some intelligent basketball minds.
I mean, that's just common sense. And they might say, oh well, Bill Russell played in a different era too. I rest my case. Like,
yeah. Yeah. All right. Women's basketball. I'm not sure what all we have to say here. I mean, they're the number five team in the country.
Actually, new rankings just dropped.
Oh, yeah.
Like, not that long ago. They fell two spots to number seven after that loss at Indiana.
That's kind of bullshit, right? You lose to the number two team in the country by single digits and you drop two spots?
I mean, if the teams behind you won, like, that's just kind of how it works. I think two and spots is fair.
Indiana was in control that most of that whole game.
And it wasn't until the second half, really. Iowa was winning at halftime, I'm pretty sure.
It was tied. I'll be honest, I turned the game on at halftime when it was tied. And from that point forward, it felt like we were on the ropes the whole time. It didn't feel like we were in control of that game at all. So two spots, I mean, that can be made up this week, you know, if things fall right. So
yeah, and like the team is good. How, like, but for some reason in my head, I just will never you will never convince me that they would be able to compete with like South Carolina or even like UConn still. I know they played UConn earlier this year and it was a relatively close game, but like, doesn't it feel like that? Like, it's just
I'm more convinced this year that they could hang with one of those teams than they would have been last year. I think, especially against a team like South Carolina, Sonano is going to have to be your X factor there.
I think South Carolina is just really good. So here's my thought process on it. At any given time, Caitlin Clark is going to be the best player on the court. And in basketball specifically, having the best player on the court on your team is a huge difference maker. That can be the difference in a game. And we've seen her be the difference maker in games before. Like, you're never out of it when she's playing for us. So that, like, she is the X factor. She raises the ceiling. She, like, with her, Iowa can achieve anything. Obviously, like, the rest of the team needs to play well. And it's tough to criticize a team, you know, that is, you know, ranked number seven. But I think at times they become too reliant on just Clark and Sonano to get things done for them, which, I mean, fair. They're their two best players. They're two of the top three scorers in program history. But, like, when it comes down to tournament time, like, all the other opposing teams are going to key in on those two, and you're going to have to make sure that you can get contributions from the other role players on the team who are also, like, it's not like outside of Clark and Sonano the team is bad, because it's not. They have very good role players in Gabby Marshall and McKenna Warnock, and even Molly Davis has like a reserve point guard, has been playing really good. And Hannah Stolke is looking like she's going to be an absolute stud once Sonano loses. Like, they have a lot of really good players around them. I just think that sometimes they get a little bit too keened in on like it being just the Caitlin Clark and Monica Sonano show. But I mean, when you're ranked number seven and you have players that are that good, it kind of makes sense to just fall back on what works.
Well, see, one of my coworkers pointed this out to me. Oh, it was like a week or two ago. I don't remember what game it was exactly, but going into the half, I think Iowa was taking care of business pretty good, but Bluter said she wants to get more people involved. And they kind of like, I think it was against Maryland, they became stagnant a little bit and struggled in the second half and allowed Maryland to get back into the game. And I kind of feel that way sometimes too. I think at times Clark should be more selfish.
I don't know. I mean, she averages almost like 10 assists a game, so, while also scoring like 26 and a half a game. So I feel like she's as selfish and also unselfish as she needs to be pretty consistently. I don't know. I don't really see that as an issue for them. Like, she knows when she needs to take over a game, and she does.
Yeah, I'm like, so the Big Ten's really good. Who do you have up there? Maryland, Indiana, Iowa. Is there any other big one I'm missing up there?
Ohio State.
So that's going to be a really, really, really interesting tournament.
What do you guys think? I've watched more women's basketball this year than I ever have. What do you think of the quarters as opposed to the halves in college basketball?
I like it. Because I don't know. It's probably not true. You can fact check me on it. But it seems like there's less media timeouts that, like, break up the middle of, like, actual playing time. As opposed to, like, in the halves that the men play, every 4 minutes you have to make a stop in the action for a media timeout. And I couldn't tell you for sure what the numbers are. But I think that there's less stops in action in the women's game because they just play the 10-minute quarters instead of the 20-minute halves. So I think that it has better game flow throughout.
Don't you think that probably evens out, though? Don't you think the quarter breaks are probably longer?
Yeah, I'm sure that they are. But what I'm saying, like, obviously, like, there's more breaks because, you know, there's four quarters as opposed to two halves. But, like, in a men's game, like, a team can be, like, going on an absolute run, and then there's a foul, or the ball goes out of bounds, and there's a stoppage, and it's because you have to take a media timeout. And in the women's game, they don't have as many of those, so that, like, the game flow stays, like, more consistent throughout the course of the game, I think.
I like the halves, personally. Unless they made the quarters more like the NBA, where you'd play 12 minutes a quarter.
I mean, that's just not going to happen.
I think I like the halves better, too. It just, the halves feel more novelty to me, I think.
Yeah. It makes, it's like, yeah, it's what differentiates.
I just don't understand the halves, but if you're in high school, you're playing quarters, and in the NBA, or in the WNBA, you're playing quarters, why are you playing halves at the college level in the men's game?
I don't make the rules. I just watch it.
I'm just saying, I think it's kind of dumb.
Also, haven't you, I mentioned this yesterday to some people I was with. Doesn't it feel like, and they were older people, doesn't it feel like, or I asked, did anybody ever used to pay this much attention to women's basketball like they have since, like, Gustafson was here?
No. And even in the Gustafson days, Caitlin Clark has garnered a whole new audience as well.
I mean, she's in a different stratosphere.
Like, she's got eyeballs on women's basketball that you would not have had without her. Like, I'll be honest, I never used to watch it, but Caitlin Clark is like appointment television.
Yeah, I'm just like Gustafson.
Gustafson, like, was great
during the Big Ten tournament. Once it got to Big Ten tournament time, I think a lot more people paid attention when she was there.
Right.
Gustafson was great, but she was the sort of prototypical stud women's basketball player, you know, just bruiser down low, just bucket, bucket, bucket. Caitlin Clark is something I don't think that the women's game has ever seen. She's the Steph Curry of women's basketball.
Yeah, she is. But one of the – so Monica Sinano is going to go down as the most underappreciated player, I think, in the history of Iowa athletics.
Probably.
She has, yeah. What were you going to say, Sin? Sorry.
I was just going to say, yeah, and it's just because her greatness is overshadowed by Caitlin Clark playing at the same time, but Sinano is the program's third leading scorer all time, and she, for her career, shoots, like, over 65% from the floor.
Well, and also, I'm not to take anything away from Sinano here, but Clark is responsible for a lot of Sinano's productions, too.
Well,
because
sure, but
she is an unbelievable passer and gets her some crazy passes down there.
Yeah, but she has over 2,000 points. So
yeah, and I'm not to take anything away from her, but play. I mean, ask anybody that's ever played with a player like the caliber of Clark. They make everybody around them better.
Mm-hmm.
So all right, the women get Indiana at least one more time this year. They're guaranteed one more. Maybe a Big Ten tournament matchup, and then who knows after that. Who did they lose to last year in the tournament? Creighton.
Yeah.
That game sucked.
Sure did.
That was a terrible weekend. Iowa loses to Richmond, and then Iowa loses to Creighton in your own stadium.
Yeah, that's brutal.
At least Creighton then went on to beat Iowa State right after that.
Yeah.
A shot at Freud.
Speaking of Iowa State, do we want to throw a little shade at the men's team here quick for falling apart like they did last year?
No, because...
It's bad for us.
Yes, because the Iowa State win is probably the best win on Iowa's resume right now. So it's better for Iowa if Iowa State can kind of figure their stuff out and keep winning down the stretch here.
It's just crazy because... They started so freaking good, and then they've lost six of their last nine. And, like, they're not losing to... Okay, they have lost to Kansas. They lost to... Actually, that's the only ranked loss. They've lost to Texas Tech, Missouri, West Virginia, Oklahoma State twice. That's... Oof. I understand the Big 12 is a good conference and, like, whatever. But, my God, that is a tough stretch. And then they finish with number 22 TCU, number 12 Kansas State, number 6 Texas, and then number 9 Baylor still on their schedule.
The Big 12 is fucking tough for men's basketball this year. Definitely the Premier League.
Yeah, and TCU, I mean, they're going to be one of Iowa's better losses.
Yeah.
And they kind of kicked the shit out of us that first time we played. Only time we've been ranked all year, and they snatched that away real quick.
It's nice flying under the radar.
Yeah. All right. Does anybody have anything else they want to talk about?
Oh, I just wanted to share this. While you guys were discussing football at the beginning of the podcast, I was playing solitaire on my computer, and I completed the game in 3 minutes and 7 seconds for a score of 29,420. And the best in the world today was 30,520. So I got pretty close to the high score in the world.
How quick did you have it done?
3 minutes and 7 seconds.
Jesus.
I was cooking.
Easy deck.
I was not paying attention to you guys at all, so.
All right. Do we want to do a draft? Danny texted us one. That's kind of a tough one.
He did?
Yeah.
What is it?
It says best breads.
Ooh. Let's just do one next time.
Yeah, that way we can actually have something cooked up.
All right, that's good with me.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, thanks for listening to another episode of the Hawkeye Tailgate Report. You can subscribe to the show on Anchor, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. You can follow it on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Soon to be TikTok. Austin's promising to put up some nude selfies up there for everybody to enjoy. Everybody to enjoy.
Must have forgotten that conversation.
You can follow all of us on Twitter. Mine is Myers_Luke. Joey's is JoeMama2196. And Austin's is Myers Austin. The show's is HTR_pod. We're almost to a great time of the year here in March Madness. So hopefully the Hawks can keep her going. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Hawks.
And fuck Nebraska.